Hey, what's up, you guys? It's Tuck Ross. Thanks for listening to another episode of Social Currency. And I wanted to jump in because we were originally supposed to go to the back half of WTF is Up with LinkedIn, but we had a special opportunity to interview David Kogan, aka The Unlocker. If you're not familiar with him, he's one of the most premier influencers in the influencer marketing space and such a hot topic right now that we actually wanted to bring this to you. We couldn't wait. And it's a two-part series this week and next week because there's so much good content from David in our interview with him that we had to break it into two to give you a full view of what is going on with influencer marketing today. So listen up, let us know your thoughts on social, hashtag social currency show. As you listen to this interview this week with David Kogan and follow up next week, stay tuned for the week after on the next part of WTF is Up with LinkedIn. We love you guys listening and wanted to bring you again this exclusive and unique interview with David Kogan. Let us know your thoughts.
Welcome to the Social Currency Podcast with digital marketing experts Jess Jensen and Tuck Ross. With a combined three decades of experience, they'll share thoughts on marketing, digital strategy, and social media to get you current quick. Looking to understand Google Analytics or how to optimize CPC? You're in the wrong place. This podcast drives discussion on digital and social strategy and their fundamental role in building your business strategy. In 30 minutes a week, we'll arm you with key talking points to speak with authority and confidence. Now, let's build your social currency.
Welcome back to the Social Currency Podcast, episode 14. Thanks for being here. I'm Jess Jensen, and joining me, as always, is my good friend Tuck Ross. How are you, Tuck?
Jess, I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Awesome. And I'm super excited because today we have a special guest joining us. I am really pleased to introduce David Kogan, otherwise known as The Unlocker. YouTuber, blogger, social influencer, and tech enthusiast. Hello, David.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we're going to be asking David what it's like to be an influencer and how he got his start, advice for business owners and leaders who might want to capitalize on this growing phenomenon called influencer marketing. But first, Tuck, the news.
The news. Hey, you guys. We spent some time on LinkedIn last week. This week, a little bit on Instagram. Instagram actually announced shopping in-app today, and it's pretty exciting because we've heard that Instagram's coming out with a standalone shopping app. What they're actually doing is trying this out inside the Instagram app itself. So after testing shopping and stories with a limited number of e-commerce brands in June, Instagram is now rolling it out globally for all advertisers. They're looking at about 90 million accounts engaging with the shopping and stories per month since it started testing the e-commerce feature, and now it's going out to everyone, which if you're looking at stories overall, there's about 400 million people engaging with Instagram stories every day. And so if you think about the fact that most of these views happening there, one third of the viewed stories are actually created by businesses. This is really going to extend social shopping in a way that really hasn't been done before. So it's very exciting. Shopping tab is actually going to be inside the Explorer. So it's going to offer users a personalized feed defined by Instagram as a channel dedicated to shopping from the brands you follow and brands you might like, which is actually a direct quote from Instagram. Very exciting. And this looks like a run up to the standalone shopping app itself. So it's a really good environment for them to test out and further expand what they've already worked on as a pilot with the shopping feature inside the Instagram. So the way brands can try this out now is trying out the shopping tab in Explorer. You can add the little shopping bag to your stories posts and actually takes you to the product to purchase. Very cool feature and excited to see where this goes next, especially as social shopping takes off within Instagram. Jess, back to you and David.
That's awesome. You and I have talked about this before. I am the prime demographic for Instagram shopping. Like, that is of all the social channels where I actually pay attention to the ads that I get served, and they are the most appropriate and customized, the things I'm actually interested in. So I'm all over that. So speaking of Instagram, and obviously Instagram is a huge platform for influencers, I want to, again, welcome David to the show. We're so excited to have our first guest, and I want to kind of start from the beginning. So you launched your blog, The Unlocker, back in 2009 and also began using YouTube as a video hosting service. So these were early days in social media and influencer marketing. I'd love it if you could walk us through what your thinking was back then and kind of your motivation for your sort of longer term plan.
Yeah, those were the good old days is what those were. the internet was simple back then. The way that it kind of started out was, and I'll try to give you the shorter version, but I was kind of running a cell phone store on my college campus where I was actually trying to sell T-Mobile service with unlocked phones that I had found in Europe because all the phones in Europe were so much cooler than ours. It was, you know, the carriers controlled all the phones that we had. There was no iPhone yet. This is how long ago this was. But I was doing that and then ended up kind of starting a blog on the side talking about unlocked phones that were coming out. The idea was that I could direct people from the blog, if they wanted, and was very transparent about it, to the website where they could then buy the phones. So I was kind of doing, I guess, content marketing back in the day before I realized that that's what it was. Then, longer story short, the blog started making more money through advertising than the actual selling of the phones. And so that's when I was like, oh, forget the website and dealing with customers. I'm going to just, you know, write and do that kind of a thing. YouTube came out of it only because it was the only free place back then that you could host a video on the internet. Which sounds crazy to anybody right now, but like back then you had to pay by the megabyte to serve videos to your users on your website, and YouTube didn't have that. So you're like, oh, all right, well, I'll use that. And it wasn't for the last maybe like 4 or 5 years that YouTube itself, and I think this is across the board for most people on YouTube, became its own life force with its own audience and all this crazy, fans, etc., right? Like became a more fanatical thing. So back then that's kind of how it all, I guess, started.
So it was kind of a pragmatic decision to use YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, it was a cost saving decision. If we're honest, yeah. Like that's really what it was. And also the UI was better back then too. Cause like we were using JW Player, like which have evolved since, but like back then they were like super complicated to just get a video to play and have the right buttons, like the controls for it was just a pain. So YouTube was a better solution at the time, regardless of, you know, all the other stuff that it now represents. Back then, it was just a good video hosting platform.
Yeah. So when you started the content portion of the website and really the blog, did you have a longer term game plan to like monetize it or make it a business? Or was it sort of just a fun kind of whimsical side gig?
So it was a little bit of both. I loved writing about phones and like I was a nerd and I still am, obviously. Like I love technology. I'm a big fan. And like I was that person that was trolling the forums, you know, XDA developers back in the day when XDA was actually a product. like trying to figure out how to tinker with my Windows Mobile phone and my, you know, whatever it was. So like writing about these things just felt fun. In the back of my mind, though, I think even back then, because I was already working, I already had a website that I was selling phones off of, that I thought, you know, maybe there's a way that this could become a living and I don't have to actually deal with customers and sell things. That has now since changed. The business has changed over the last 11 years. But, you know, back then, that's all I just wanted to write. And like that was a goal. But I don't think I realized how quickly it would come to fruition. And it did, probably within a year of starting. I remember seeing the AdSense account, right? Like the first month it made 50 bucks. And I was like, and I was 19 at the time, right? So I was like, yeah, that's awesome.
Amazing.
Like, I'm gonna keep doing this. And then it was like 300 and then 400. And then it's just slowly started creeping. At a certain point I was like, no, this could be a living. And then that kind of led to other things where I went after larger and larger advertisers and advertising agencies back then, Federated Media to name one of them, and bugged them for like 9 months to represent me because I knew that that would be a much bigger jump in revenue compared to AdSense, which is generally the lowest tier when you're trying to advertise. And so eventually they said yes. And at that point is where it became like, oh, okay, this is a legit business now at this point. Saved up money and ended up moving to New York shortly after that.
So you talked about, you know, this is like 10 years ago, right? And obviously things have changed dramatically since then,
yeah.
Whether it's from an influencer perspective, a YouTube perspective, a blogging content strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that, everything,
right.
Ridiculous.
The internet.
So I get the internet, just the internet in general.
Very different, right?
So I guess I'd love to ask kind of if you knew what you know now 10 years back when you started the Unlocker, would you have done anything differently?
Yes, everything. Well, so I want to say, yeah, one of the biggest thing that was such an eye-opener to me, and this is actually something just the last few years, was realizing that that I'm not alone in this, right? Because for so long, I was doing this out of my house, or at one point, it was out of my father's house, right? And like, just doing this all on my own. And so what the problem with that is, like, it sounds nice to run your own company and do that, but the other side of that coin is that there's nobody asked for help. Right? There's nobody to even turn to that, like, you know, if you have a boss above you can be like, hey, I made this decision. Does this look right to you? I don't have that. I never have. And so there was a lot of time wasted now that I look back on trial and error. Because, you know, I would do something for a year before I was like, oh, crap, that was a bad idea. Right? Because you don't know. And there's an ask. It's a new industry. Like, there was nobody to look up, no information on the internet about it. And I think in the last few years, it's just been very helpful to even find other influencers or other people that run publications, because it's a very similar industry, that just you can bounce ideas off of and just go, hey, did you try this? Did that work? No? Cool. Thank you for saving me 6 months. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that kind of a thing was
totally
is something I wish
totally.
I knew back
then. Like a community.
Then. Yeah, have a community. I like just know that there are other people that do this, and reaching out to them and trying to talk to them would have been something I would tell younger me doing this job.
Cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. So David, let me jump in here because
sure. You
know, some would say you're living the dream, right? It's a very attractive and interesting lifestyle, glamorized in some cases by like the Gary Vee and talking about the side hustle and building that up. Where do you say you were really kind of able to make that jump into kind of driving this full time as like your thing? You talked a little bit about getting Federated to represent you. Where do you feel like you kind of made the point where you're like, this is what I'm doing. This is my thing.
So I want to say, I mean, that came pretty quickly for me. Although again, that was a very different time, right? Like 10 years ago, 11 years ago, like I was probably one of the first blogs out there talking about cell phones, right? Like the first person that was writing on a regular basis about this type of stuff, like along with Engadget was around a similar time. Like, you know what I mean? So like this was, it's a very different industry than it is, say, now to some degree. But like as soon as it started to make enough for me to pay my bills, that was it. I was like, yeah, no, like this is great. I can see, and it was growing at such a rate that it was hard not to be like, yeah, now this could work. At least enough to for a 19-year-old kid at the time, 20-year-old, 21-year-old kid to pay my own bills. And so it was a much easier decision for me than it would be, say, for somebody, you know, who's probably, you know, has more responsibility than I did as a 21-year-old and a lot more bills. So that was an easy jump for me at the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. How did that change the way you lived your life once you had that feeling of like, you know, I'm ready to go, I'm set?
Yeah. I mean, as a 20-year-old kid, you know, like, working for myself and like, you know, because I always tried little entrepreneurial things as a kid, always. Like I had the lemonade stand. I did the like Coca-Cola in the popsicles because I thought that was a good idea. You know, like I went through like all the phases. I actually, before the Unlocker actually worked, I had plenty of other business ideas that didn't work, right? So there was like, High Redline Racing was the name of the company originally, and it was for a while even with the Unlocker because I was reselling car parts on the internet, right? So like this was always like,
that's
I was
so
going
funny.
To do this. And so when it finally worked,
You
were
an entrepreneur
liberating.
From the very beginning.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like looking back now, I was. Like I don't think at the moment I would never consider myself that or thought of it. I was just like too ambitious for my own good, I guess. Like I didn't like listening to other people. I didn't want to like have a job or something. You know, and I had a few, but like the goal was always this. And so when that did work in the way that it did, that was obviously very liberating and very, you know, vindicated. And it was really funny to watch my parents be like, what do you do? I don't really, what? Like, you're not, you know. So that was an interesting experience for sure. But. They still do that to this day, by the way.
Yeah.
Every now and
then. Yeah, a big point, though, that you went after it and you went after it hard.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome that you sold car parts. That I want to say,
I sold
Armando, like, he did that, too. Do you know that?
No, I didn't. I could see that about him, though, because he's very into cars.
Yeah.
I could totally see him doing that.
Yeah, like that. Maybe there's some sort of connection between, like, tech and cars. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, there's a nerdy, like, it works. I want to know how it works. I want to tinker with it. I want to change it. Like, that makes sense to me for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so the word influencer gets thrown around a lot. And obviously, like, influencer marketing is, like, a thing, has been around for, you know, better part of a decade. Do you like that word? Do you like being called an influencer? And if not, like, what would you rather be referred to?
Yeah, I don't like that word. It's okay to be called it, I think, in, like, a marketing sense, because it's just become the term. Like, there's no getting around that. But I think for me to call myself that seems a little pretentious, a little like, I influence people. What do you do? You know, like, I don't, I think that that's kind of annoying and not something, that's not the way I would talk. I think I prefer something around the lines of, like, a content creator or something like that, because to some degree we're all influencers, right? This influencer thing has been around for a very long time in the sense of companies used to go after the influencer within the family or the influencer within the group, right? Like the tech enthusiast in this industry, at least, right, is the person that tells all his friends what they should buy. And that was always, like, that's a normal thing, right? I do the same exact thing. The only difference is that I create content around it, and that content has developed an audience. And so that's where I become a little more relevant to your marketing strategy than, say, you know, the kid down the street that happens to tell his whole family, right? There's just, I have a larger audience. So that's why I don't really like the word influencer, because I don't know. We all influence people. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. And I've always felt like it is like a word that you use when you're not an influencer. But if you are an influencer, right, you wouldn't call yourself an influencer?
No, we would never call ourselves that. Nobody I know, at least, would be like, yeah, we're a bunch of influencers. Hi. You know, like, there's no way that anybody would ever introduce themselves as that.
Right, totally. So that kind of is a good segue into, like, the criteria of, let's just say, an influencer or content creator. Like, with your experience working with different brands, whether it's in tech or outside of tech, what do you think, like, I don't know, the two or three kind of main criteria they're looking for in partnering with someone like you? Is it around your following? Is it around the quality of your like the production value? Like, what's the criteria in your mind?
So for brands, usually, I think it varies by the brand and it varies by the campaign even, right? Like, depending on what their KPIs are and what their goals are, it would change what they're looking for, right? So if they're looking for, you know, a piece of content that they're going to then recycle and have live on other websites or on their own properties, or, like, production value is going to come into a bigger play, right? Whereas maybe they just are trying to do, like, a branding thing and they just want as many eyeballs on something as possible. Then it's going to come down to your followers and the average view count per video or the average, you know, impressions per Instagram post, whatever it may be, right? And then the other way that we measure that is, of course, by engagement, right? And a more engaged audience you assume is more fanatical or is more likely to, you know, do something when an influencer tells them to, whatever it may be, right? So all those things, I think, come into play, and I think there's just a little more weight on each one depending on the end goals for that brand and that campaign.
Yep. Cool. So obviously, within the tech influencer space, which is the space that you play, there are, like you mentioned earlier, kind of this community. There are a number of folks that are doing some of the same things that you're doing. So I'm going to let you kind of toot your own horn here. And I don't want you to be bashful, but, like, what do you think you're doing that's distinctive from your peer group? Like, what makes you stand out, or what are you good at?
Everything. I'm just so much better than all of them at everything they all do.
Done.
I don't know. I think it's interesting. Since I have finally started talking to other people that do what I do, like that thing that I wish I did a long time ago, there has not been a single person that I've met that has ever... There's never been somebody that's looked at me like another tech YouTuber and we've been like, you're my competition. Right? There's always just kind of been this understanding of, like, it'd be different if we were all actors trying to get the same type of a role in a feature film, right? There's only 4 feature films that happen a year at that studio. There's only, you know, like, that would be more of a competition, but the internet is so large and people have so much time on the internet when videos are 4 or 5 minutes a piece, 6, 7, 8 minutes a piece, that a lot of them actually watch all of our stuff. So we actually, and I can tell you in my own analytics, like, a lot of, at least in YouTube in particular, and in the tech space, because that's what I know, there's a lot of overlap, right? So like a lot of the people that watch, like a lot of my traffic might come from a suggested video, which means that it came from a my video is sitting next to one of my constituents' videos. And then after they watched his or hers, then they clicked on mine. So like there's never been this like competition thing, which I think is amazing. And it's been eye opening to me that's how this works in this industry compared to other industries where talent is whatever. So I don't know. I think maybe I have a unique tone as everybody does, right? Like we all have our own personalities. And I think that's a big part of it. Some people might prefer to watch me explain something. I like to do explainer videos that maybe my constituents don't necessarily do. Just cause I'm that kind of a nerd where I want to know like how everything works. And I want to tell everybody like, do you understand how this works? Like it's so crazy how it works. And so maybe that's a bit of a differentiator between me and them, but I don't know if I'd say I do something better than them.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, just having worked with you, I think that's one of your strong suits is the ability to take a complex topic that, you know, engineers understand and even a tech enthusiast, let alone a mass consumer, would not. And you're really good at breaking it down, you know, providing analogies, like making it feel palatable and human. So those explainer videos, which, by the way, are huge on YouTube across multiple verticals. I think that's a strong suit for you for sure.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So question for you. David, Jess and I were debating this the other week. Is vlog really a word? I don't know if this is a word. Is it a word? A vlogger? Yeah, is that a thing?
I think it's a word. It's definitely a word. I think the definition is harder to pin down. Because to me, a vlog is very much a style of filmmaking, right? So in the same way that like a documentary is a style of filmmaking, a vlog to me is where somebody is kind of personally like kind of walking you through events as opposed to a narrative of like a script that they've prepared. And so I actually did this, like there's a client recently that wanted me to do a video and we were discussing the type of video and you know, do you want it more vlog-like or do you want it more documentary-like, speaking of those two terms? And they were like, well, we kind of want a mix. And I was like, okay, all right, let me try to figure out what that means. But I did kind of come up with something that they were happy with, that they were like, oh yeah, that does make sense. Because it's almost like, okay, I'm going to lead you along this story, but I also have like a lot of information that I can't just talk and hold the camera out and talk to. It's just too much. So that part is going to be used with a lot of other visuals and more of like a documentary, like we're going back in time and then boom, we're back to where I am. And I'm sitting here talking to you as if we're talking. Like this is very vlog-like, I would think, right? Like this format of like us speaking, they can't see us. We're on webcams. If we're talking to a webcam, for example, is the same concept, right? And it just feels more personal as opposed to more grandiose or more narrative driven, I guess. But I don't really know. I think if you ask somebody else that, they probably would have a different answer. So
I think Jess, you actually called it a vlog at one point. So, you know, we were entertained.
Yep.
A vlog.
I was gonna say, who had what side of this and who did I just help?
Right.
Of the argument that you were having.
I know. Like we were actually just trying to figure. Yeah, the argument was just about like pronunciation. We didn't even get into
Is it face to face? Okay, so
you added.
That's awesome. I mean, that leads into you did a playlist recently about your travel experiences and other things outside of tech. How do you?
I made a vlog.
Yeah, there you go. perfect lead up, right? But we're curious, like thinking about you as a writer, as a developer, thinking about this. How do you develop your content plan? What goes in that thought process?
So, content plan overall, or are we talking about just like the vlog series itself?
I think overall, yeah. I'd be curious, kind of, how you mix in some of the personal elements with the rest.
Okay, so I would say, like, because I run a website as well, so like it's there's a part of that plays into this as well. But essentially, like, I would choose different topics based on different goals. So, for example, I know that one thing I'm really good at as far as the website is concerned is like SEO content, right? So I'll pick a certain amount of topics that I know are probably evergreen. Generally, they start with the word how to for me, because that's just kind of what I'm known for and what Google has ranked me for. And so I'll come up with a few different pieces of content that I think are something that people would care about or they might be looking for. I'll start doing keyword research against that, try to figure out if there's even search volume, et cetera, et cetera. That's one way. And then I'll go, okay, well, I want some more like social sharing stuff, stuff that I think that it's going to do better on YouTube itself as far as suggested videos are concerned. So I'll go through the process of kind of figuring out, you know, what are hot topics at the moment? What are things that are being shared? And I might research that as well. And what are other people doing videos on? And is there a way that I can improve upon some of the other things that are being shared or provide a unique perspective? Or is there a topic I could even come up with that maybe somebody hasn't done yet? And so then that's a few articles or a few videos that would go down that path. And then, you know, try to figure out a few things that I could do maybe thought leadership wise. Like, is there some stuff that I don't think is really going to get traffic, but it might help brands understand that I'm an expert in X, Y, and Z, right? So similar concept if anybody is used to doing this for like for a publication, right? It's a very similar thing. So I would do that. And then as far as like, you know, trying to, you know, put my personality in the stuff, I just try to do that with every video. Like that's just something that I think as far as YouTube is concerned is very important. You know, it people fall in love or are attracted to like the you in the YouTube, right? And you need to be able, you need to be also be having a one-on-one conversation with somebody. And so because it's that medium, I think that the personality is a very big part of that. So you try to do the best. I mean, I don't always accomplish that in every video, but like I try. And that's it. And then like, and the vlogs were fun because that's kind of something I'm just challenging myself with. I just figured I would, you know, try a different format. Like I'm so used to doing in my mind, it's the very same thing every time, right? There's a script, there's words, there's, you know, me on camera, and then there's inserts that go over it. Like here's a close-up of this when I'm talking about it. Here's a close-up of this when I'm talking about it. Like it's very formulaic in my head at this point, 10 years later. So I wanted to try something I'm very uncomfortable with, which was vlogging. And the first one I made, I didn't even release because it was that bad. Like there's little things that you don't, as a person who's so used to doing any type of content creation in one direction, you're not, knowing that this is not what you're used to, you don't realize that there's so many nuances that you don't think of. Like I never had to change scenes. Like using B-roll to tell the audience that I'm going somewhere else is not something I've ever done in a tech video. Right? And it's something so simple, probably, to some degree, when I say it out loud. But it was something I didn't account for in that first video. And so like this, okay, all right. And I was just bouncing all over the place. And I was like, okay, nope, that doesn't work. Try again. And so it's an exercise, the vlogs. And I think that's kind of fun. And I think it also teaches people a little bit more about my personality because it is so not scripted. That it converts a few people that are subscribers into fans, which is a little bit different, right? Like they're now the people that are going to come on every video and say hi, as opposed to maybe just subscribe and only pay attention when one of their videos comes up that they're interested in.
Yeah.
So were you, just to jump in on that, were you creating the vlog series more so because you wanted to challenge yourself to do something you hadn't done before creatively? Or was it because you felt like, gosh, I'm becoming too formulaic, I want to be more human, let me round out all the tech videos with something that's a little more lifestyle?
I think it's a little bit of the first one. Like I wanted to challenge myself. I definitely always wanted to do a vlog just because I thought that they would be fun. On top of that, like there is the business aspect of it, of being like, you know, this type of content is going to create fans, like I said, more so than like the one-off video that somebody found through YouTube search, for example, right? Like they might subscribe, but they don't really care about me in that same level that if they've watched a couple of vlogs, they might. The other thing with the vlog was I wanted some form of content that was more episodic, right? Because like this how-to on X, Y, and Z phone, and then all of a sudden a how-to on some other type of phone or a review of this product and then a review of that product, those people don't necessarily care. The guy who watches the iPhone video, promise you, doesn't care about the Android video, right? And vice versa. So to have something that I could start a series of that would go across everything that anybody could watch and they could watch in order, they could even go back and watch old ones and they're still sort of relevant, like that was also kind of part of the thought process as well.
And that's your social currency for the week. Another big thanks to David for joining the show. Don't forget, as I mentioned at the beginning, this is part one of two. We're going to come back with even more content from David as we wrap up on this topic of influencer marketing, a lot more around it that we want you guys to get into. So let us know. In the meantime, check out his channels and keep an eye out for his courses as we talked about. Those are coming up. As always, we love your feedback and input. If we miss something that you want us to discuss in a future episode, or if you want us to get deeper into influencer marketing, hashtag us feedback, hashtag Social Currency Show, or email us directly, info@socialcurrencyshow.com. That goes directly to Jess and I, and we'll get back to you right away. We love to hear your ideas. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/socialcurrencyshow, where we are dropping the latest, plus giving you news and commentary between episodes. Always a good spot to connect with us directly. And Jess and I are also on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. So look us up, add us up, let us know what your thoughts are. And if you got something of value out of today's show, leave us a review on iTunes. If you've heard our intro and outro every week, that's David Kogan. So join us next week again as we get into more influencer marketing. Really appreciate you guys listening. We'll see you later, Jess. And thanks again, David. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
You just listened to Social Currency, a podcast with Tuck Ross and Jess Jensen. Like what you hear? Subscribe to Social Currency in your favorite podcast app, and please leave a review on iTunes. Have a question for the show? Want to ask about a specific topic? Email us at info@socialcurrencyshow.com. If we include it in an upcoming episode, we will send you something awesome. Thanks for tuning in, and remember to check out the full show notes with all the links that we referenced at socialcurrencyshow.com.
Hey, you guys, it's Tuck. Have you signed up for our newsletter yet? If you haven't, head over to socialcurrencyshow.com. It's the fastest way to get an update on when the show comes out. We're also starting to include more information around the show notes, news items we're talking about in the show. Plus, coming up, you'll have exclusive access to things that come from our guests and other things that we're working on. So check it out, socialcurrencyshow.com. Sign up for the newsletter. Get it in your inbox every Monday. It's not another newsletter. It's your social currency.